Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Cenovus.com. Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Cenovus.com.
And wherever you are, go ahead and share tonight's episode with someone, with a friend. And if you're driving in your car, let someone know where they can hear TMG.
It's time to get on board. TMG is taking off.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to TMG. I'm your host, Travis Patton Sr. I enjoy discovering and sharing real-life moments of inspiration from everyday people. And this show is about finding moments of inspiration for our everyday lives. And look, and if you're going to tell me something, then tell me something good.
Hi, everybody, and welcome to a new episode of TMG. I'm your host, Travis Patton Sr. Guys, you know how we like to do it. Don't forget to visit, share, and like our YouTube page. That's Tell Me Something Good with a capital T. And as always, I want to give a huge shout out to my biggest supporter, my biggest fan, my lovely wife, Nicole. Hey, girl, how you doing? I know you're watching. I know you're listening. Guys, Nicole and I just celebrated our 11th wedding anniversary in May. That's right. We did last month, man. 11 years married to me. Man, I don't know how she's doing it. Good. Kudos to her, man. But guys, thank you so much for being a part of the show. Thank you for being here. I am so excited, and I am so glad that you're here, that you're listening, that you're watching, and maybe you're saying this is your very first time tuning in, your very first time hearing my voice and watching the show. Let me take this time at this moment to tell you thank you. I'm so glad and excited that you're here, and maybe you said, but Travis, man, I've been listening to you ever since you've been on, ever since you've been streaming, ever since TMG's been playing. Thank you so much for being part of the show. Much love to everybody that's watching. Thank you so much, guys, for being here. Man, tonight's episode is going to be one that you're going to be glad you caught. I'm so glad that you're here, whether you're listening in Bangladesh or maybe you're listening in Canada or the UK. Maybe you're listening right now in Spain, or maybe you're listening in Morocco. Wherever you are around the world and where you listen to TMG, thank you so very much. Guys, you know how we do it now. Everybody knows that this show is all about finding moments of inspiration in our everyday lives. So if you have an inspiring story that you'd like to share and maybe come on a show, drop us an email at tellmesomething21@gmail.com. And you said, Travis, man, look, I know someone that has an exciting story, an encouraging story that they would like to share, and they would be an excellent guest on your show. But I don't want to come on a show, man. I'm a little camera shy. That's okay. You can still drop us then listen. Their email at tellmesomething21@gmail.com. And you can even remain anonymous if you'd like. Guys, we have a couple of affiliate sponsors. I want to go ahead and play that information. Get it out the way. I'm ready for tonight's be good, guys. Don't you go nowhere. That's right. Come on in. Yeah, you clicking the button. I'm glad you're here. Thank you for stopping by. Be right back. Don't go.
Walmart is a proud associate sponsor of TMG Tell Me Something Good podcast. Please use the special link, bit.ly/tellmesomethinggood, and visit our sponsor. Remember, I may earn a commission when you buy through this link. Fanatics is the place to go for all of your officially licensed sports gear from your favorite sports and sports teams. Use the special link, bit.ly/tellmesomething21, and pay a visit to our sponsor today. Remember, I may earn a commission when you buy through this link.
Breaking your phone sucks. Breaking your phone, then trying to sell it online sucks. Breaking your phone, selling it online, only to find out that the money you'll only get for it sucks. Breaking your phone, selling it online for peanuts, shipping it, and finding out that you got scammed sucks. Gizmogo makes selling your phone fast, safe, and simple by paying you the highest price for your device. And with Gizmogo's free unlimited shipping and price guarantee, millions of people are starting to sell on Gizmogo. Fast, safe, simple. Gizmogo.
There it is, guys. Please visit one of our affiliate sponsors. The information will be in the chat. So if you are here and you're watching this, all the special links are right there in the chat. And if you're listening to this later on Spotify or Apple Podcasts, guys, pay attention to the links. We'll hand that out. Guys, I'm ready to get started in this. Tonight's episode, if you did not catch it and you were unaware, man, tonight's episode, guys, is entitled The Bridge Home, Reconnecting Migrant Children with Family. I don't know, people that knew me as a kid, if you were a child growing up with me, one of the favorite things that we enjoyed doing was riding our bike. If you ever said, as a child growing up, you can't ride your bike, that is a death sentence. I mean, riding your bike was the thing to do. I mean, you would hop on that bike as if you had a car going to work, right? So one of the things I enjoyed doing, one of my favorite things that I enjoyed doing when I was a kid or a child was ride my bike. I would ride the wheels off that thing. I would ride that thing everywhere. Now, let me ask everybody a question that's watching, that's listening. Did you ever hop on a bike and just ride? The breeze in your hair, when I had hair, your clothes, I mean, in summertime, that little cool breeze. Did you ever just hop on a bike and just ride? Who enjoyed riding the bike? Yeah, there you go. And you went wherever the road took you and just kept going because you knew your way back home, right? There was this long bridge where I lived. There was this long bridge that I rode across one day. Now, then all of a sudden, it became late. I got tired, but the only way to get back home was to cross that long bridge. Look, if you turn on your news and read almost every other social media post, and it won't take long to be reminded that there is a huge problem with these separation of immigrant children from their families at the U.S.-Mexico border. Now, our guest today is the founder of Forever Homes for Foster Kids. Now, he's a leading international authority on immigration issues and foster families, a proud Navy veteran and an author. And he joins us today to discuss this crisis and the work his organization provides to help, listen, reunite children with their families. Guys, do me a favor. I want to give you a huge TMG welcome, guys, for Richard Villasada. Richard! What's up, man? How you doing?
I'm doing excellent. I love your energy. I'm so happy to be here.
Man, I'm excited to have you here, Richard. Guys, Richard and I talked before the show, and you would have thought there were just two old friends just talking. We just talked and kept going, and we both was like, well, it's time to go. Then we sparked up another topic, and we kept going. Richard has energy, guys, and he is here today to talk about something that we can't escape. You turn on the radio, podcast, TV, social media. It's everywhere, Richard. It's in the mainstream news. It's in other type of media. It's all type of media. It is all over the place. So, Richard, thank you for joining us today. Thank you for your service. I appreciate that. And I am honored to have you here taking time out your schedule for us, Richard. I really am.
Well, thank you so much. I'm definitely happy to be here.
Woohoo! All right, guys. Richard, oh, man. The work that you do by reconnecting these innocent children with their families in Latin America. In Latin America, guys, let me help you out. Latin America does not just, it's not just Mexico, okay? It's Latin America where the language is spoken. So Latin America is not just Mexico. But the work that you do to reconnect these vulnerable and innocent children with their families in Latin America is a huge, huge task. How long have you been doing this?
I've been doing this more than 3 decades.
Wow.
Yep. And I will say this, in our field of social work, working with children who end up in foster care, working with these children who come across either with a parent or with somebody else, maybe someone was paid, however the child gets here and into a system, you said the words, they're vulnerable, they're innocent, mm-hmm. and I'm actually one of the old timers. 30 years is a long time in this industry for someone to still be in it.
Are you kidding me, man? That's a long time. So needless to say, Richard, you've seen all types of situations. I just heard you mention some, whether they came across, whether someone paid them, or however, you've seen every type of scenario that could possibly be, and with the children ending up in a system that they had no idea, in a foreign country, speaking a language they do not understand. They're already vulnerable from everything else that's happening. You know, they've been displaced because their whole life has been taken up from what it was to now what it is. And everything is not the same. There's nothing around it familiar but their parents. And then all of a sudden, they're not there, Richard.
That's right. That's right. They're gone.
That's a lot for a child to kind of process. What are the average ages or age ranges of the children, Richard, that you help help cross that bridge back to that families? What's the average range that you're helping children with?
Average range is probably between 8 and 15. But now I have worked cases where the youngest child was 6 months old. And that's important to point out because there was a lot of talk back then in 2018 mm-hmm. about Customs and Border Patrol, that they were said to be taking children away from mothers. And people said, no, absolutely not. I don't work a case unless that has happened.
So oh, wow.
When I say I worked a case with a 6-month-year-old child, that child was removed from that parent. And 10% of the cases I worked were children 5 years and younger.
Wow. 6 months? The child is just born, Richard. 6 months? To all the parents out there listening, I want you to imagine your child. And at 6 months, that child, you don't see them anymore. They're taken from you. I want you to begin to imagine that. I can't even begin to imagine what a parent must be thinking, Richard, when a child is taken from them at such a young age. And you said you've worked with children 5 and younger. And if you're working with a child, it's that kind of situation has occurred.
Absolutely. Yeah, they have been separated and they were not reunited with that parent. It could have been a father, often it's a mother. Mm-hmm. And we got involved in all of this because those separations, and that the courts found that the separations had been done illegally. Mm. And so back in 2018, there was an executive order signed saying, look, we have got to reunite these children with their parents. And I was invited to talk on ABC, and they asked me, how soon is this going to happen? I said, it's not going to happen quickly. It can't happen quickly. And this is nothing to do with, quote, politics. What? It is just reality. If you've got, you know, an order for 1,000 whatevers, can you get it out in 24 hours? No. You don't have the demand, you know, the personnel. You don't have the supplies. And it's the same thing here. They were told to do this. Now, that's okay. The judges could do whatever, and they did to put pressure. Mm-hmm. But was it going to happen in 30 days? No.
No.
We are now looking at 7 years, and there's still children out there who have not yet been, you know, we don't know where some of the children are, and we definitely don't know where their parents are.
Wow. So let's say 7 years of backlog, 7 years of children in the system. So wherever the parents were, they're 7 years from that point. And you have no way of how, I don't know even know where you begin to look after 7 years, Richard.
Well, that's where we come in. And that's actually why I got involved. My original expertise, and still, mm-hmm. is in working with U.S.-born children who go into U.S. foster care. And right. that's handled at the county level. So just to share, when a child is removed from, you know, parents for whatever reason, it could be abuse. That's usually 1 out of 5. A lot of times it's neglect. And unfortunately, that gets into, you know, poverty issues right. and, you know, things that are way beyond the scope of our time here. But they end up in foster care. And at that point, the agencies are required to go look around for a relative. Could be an aunt, a grandparent. And if they're in the neighborhood and they can reach them easily and they say, yes, I'll take in the child.
Right,
great.
Right.
Pass the child off and the child can be there while the system does its thing, works with the parents, sees if it's safe for the child to go back. Okay. Mm-hmm. But a lot of times that relative isn't nearby and they have to do what they call family finding. And this is a real simple process. 3 steps. 1, make a list of all the relatives, and that may be talking to the mother or the father, both, and the child, and getting a list of all the relatives that they have. Mm-hmm. And then 2 is going to be getting the contact information, because maybe they know about them, they know they live in Texas, but no, right. I don't have right. a phone number. They moved last year. I haven't written to them. Wow. So that is the area where we get brought in. Because we specialize when that relative is living in Latin America. Like you said, it's not just Mexico. We're talking Guatemala,
correct.
El Salvador. We're talking Brazil, where they speak Portuguese, not correct. Spanish. Dominican Republic in the middle of the Caribbean. We work all of those countries. And that's our wow. specialty, is finding people there. And if I can, I'll share an example that will...
Yeah, absolutely.
So we had a girl who was 15 years old. She was born in the U.S., so a U.S. citizen. But both her parents had come from the Dominican Republic. And the father was never part of the picture. Something happened to the mother. She had a psychotic break. We don't know where the mother is. The agency doesn't know. And so the girl had been in foster care for several months. And the agency came to my nonprofit, Forever Homes, and asked us to locate whatever relatives they had on that list. Now, for this girl, she only gave them 4 names, 2 aunts, 2 uncles. There were 50-ish, was what she said, and they lived in the Dominican Republic. That was all the information that we had. We closed that case in less than 48 hours.
How? How?
Everyone asks me that question. You know, over 3 decades, I have developed a process where we put teams in a country mm-hmm. and we coach them. We give them information. We have lists of government agencies and we try to go as local as possible. We don't call the embassy. Forget that. We don't call the State Department. Forget that. These are things that I say those because that's what the usual counties will do. They'll call up the consulate. It could work, but it's 50-50, maybe 75-25. You know what I mean? So they end up coming to me. And in this case, we had a team down there in Dominican Republic.
Uh-huh.
And one of them knew someone, and that someone said, you know what? I think my family is friends with that uncle.
Wow.
Boom. And it was actually 36 hours that we closed that case from start to finish.
Incredible. Absolutely.
And that, and then the notification goes out. And that's the third step of family findings. List, contact information, mm-hmm. then notification. And we come in at the contact point, and then we give the information. We gave the phone number. They called. The girl, of course, was ecstatic because this was her favorite uncle.
Oh, so wait a minute. Not only did you just find a family member, you found her favorite uncle.
My favorite uncle.
Oh, yeah.
So that's, and we do that all the time, and that's what we do for children who are all over the United States. And you know, we've talked about this before. Why care about foster kids?
Mm-hmm. That's a good question. Why care about foster kids? Then you know, the first thing what people will say, well, they're not mine. That's somebody else's problem. Why should I care about something that's not mine, my issue?
Well, we can look at it in a number of ways. If for those who do have kids, let me mm-hmm. address that one. Foster kids are sitting in class with their kids right now. They are outside at the park. They are everywhere other kids are. They're kids. They're doing what kids do. They're
going
to the same restaurants. They're outside. They're inside. They're online. These are foster kids. And they are there without a parent, without relatives.
Mm-hmm.
They are traumatized, like you said. They were taken away. Imagine this. They're having lunch, dinner, 6 o'clock.
Come on.
There's a bang on the door. They hear a lot of loud yelling. And the next yep. thing they know, the mother's yelling. And some guy who's dressed in blue has got a gun. He's walking in. He's picking, you Marcus? Yes, Marcus, you need to come with me. And either is picking Marcus up or carrying Marcus out. And the mother's screaming. And Marcus doesn't know what's going on. He thinks he's being kidnapped.
Wow.
I mean, think of it. Why would the child know what's going on? The child has no clue.
They're a child.
They're a child. All they know is mom is screaming, and maybe mom now is being put on the floor with some big guy on top of mom. As far as the child's concerned, my mom's being beaten.
Yep.
And my dad's on the floor, or I don't even see dad. What did you all do to my dad? And they're taken to the car, put in the car, and it doesn't matter how nicely they're treated. The child is looking at the environment around them, and this has been said by child experts. These children feel like they've been kidnapped.
The brain processes it the same way, because they have been forcibly removed from their situation of normalcy. Richard, there's no difference from that, and I absolutely see why they would have that. They would share the same trauma as a kidnapped victim.
Absolutely. Now let's bring this back to the question that we were asking.
Yeah.
Why should I care?
Why?
If there's a person out there who doesn't care about kids, there's not much I'm going to be able to say to that person. That person, listen, they can live their life as they want to. I'm here for the ones who do care about kids.
That's
if you don't care about kids and pets while live on a desert island, hey, good for you. I hope you find it. Really. I mean, seriously, good for you. But for those people who do care about kids and have that kind of heart to care about others, and if you're in a position of strength, you care about the weak, you want to help bring them across, you want to help those people have more, then you're the right person.
You're the right one.
Absolutely. And whether they're interacting with your child, and that's actually amazing, if you mention foster care, how many people have a brother that is, quote, was a foster child. That's now their brother, their sibling, how they had a cousin, or they had a relative who their child got taken away.
That's right.
Or they had a relative who became a foster parent for another relative's child. There's a lot of ways that adoption plays into this with people who have
correct.
Nothing to do with the child. all of these ways that people become involved. It's all around us. We just need to say, has anyone here been involved with foster care? And watch the hands go up.
Yep. My hands up.
Yep. My hands my up. Too. Yep.
My grandmother became my foster parent for me. So absolutely. So I understand exactly. It is, my mom was there. She just was in a situation where she wasn't able to be there for me as she could. As time went on, she could, but I decided to stay with my grandmother. I was already there. Why relocate? I was happy at that point. But so I absolutely understand. So when someone asked, why should you care about foster children? I said, you think you don't know one. I guarantee you do. I promise you. You know, there is the stigma sometimes, Richard, that goes along with it. But that's a different story. That's a different story. You spend a lot of time helping these children find their way home from a journey. Like, we just got to mention this. They're kidnapped, right? A kidnapping is still a journey, but it's an unwanted one, but it's still a journey. But you help these children find their way home from a journey they had no decision in making. We just talked about this. This can emotionally and mentally take a toll on anyone. Imagine a 6-year-old. Imagine a 6-year-old or 5-year-old, you know, or 8-year-old even. You know, they can get snatched out their home or whatever's going on, whatever the situation is, or they migrate with their parents and, you know, to the U.S. But whatever happens, this can take a toll on anybody emotionally and mentally. Anyway, how does your organization handle the emotional and mental impact this type of separation caused on children?
Now, I will have to say that is not my field working with it. We are very lucky that there are many nonprofits out there, and I know some of the heads of these nonprofits who have just dedicated their lives to helping these children to get over the trauma, because our government is not doing a great job of that, never has, never will. And that is also part of this whole process, whether a child's in the federal foster care system, and that's mm-hmm. only for immigrant children, or they're in the county system, which is what runs the foster care system for U.S.-born children. Mm-hmm. Doesn't matter. They're all pretty terrible when it comes to mental health. And that is something that these children, unfortunately, don't get a lot of mental help when it comes to whether in foster care or even when they get out. At that point, they get further and further away from having that kind of help. So it really is so sad. And that's why it's so important that if we can, to get them back to a relative. Now, if they're an immigrant child and they're in a foster care system, the federal one, they do the same thing. They try to find the relative, and if they can't, then they try to see if they can find a relative in Latin America, which is the children that I work with.
Right.
And again, they come to my nonprofit and ask us to go find those relatives living wherever they are. We've done Brazil, Argentina. Actually, we closed a case recently. They had been working to find this father for more than 4 years.
Jeez, man.
And more than 3 agencies had been involved, and they all said, look, we just can't do it. So after 4 years of searching, they finally turned it over to my nonprofit. And so it's a cold case. If you've watched any kind of police procedural, now, SVU, know it. That's cold.
No evidence, no trace, no nothing, no breadcrumbs to lead you to them.
Not much in this case. And a lot of times we've worked cases where they would say, we want you to find Travis, and Travis lives in the United States. Well, can you give me anything else to go on? No. That's it. That's all we get for some of these countries. And we close those cases. So we closed the case with this one in Argentina. We found the father. We found that he was actually living in England. I was able to send a photo. I've got an expert. He's able to show me on a Google map exactly where this guy had been standing in downtown London.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Synovus Energy, Our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Synovus.com.
This country was built on a distinctly American work ethic. But today, work is in trouble. We've outsourced most of our manufacturing to other countries. And with that, we sent away good jobs and diminished our capability to make things. American Giant is a clothing company that's pushing back against this tide. They make a variety of high-quality clothing and activewear, like sweatshirts, jeans, dresses, jackets, and so much more. All made right here in the USA, from growing the cotton to adding the final touches. So when you buy American Giant, you create jobs for seamsters, cutters, and factory workers in towns and cities across the United States. And it's about more than an income. Jobs bring pride, purpose. They stitch people together. If all that sounds good to you, visit American-Giant.com and get 20% off your first order when you use code STAPLE20 at checkout. That's 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com with promo code STAPLE20.
When you have to stop but don't really want to, stop at BP. Because BP has everything you need to keep it going. Fuel to keep the adventures going. The BP Me app to keep the savings and the commutes going. Snacks and drinks to keep the crew going. And the BP Me Rewards Visa to keep the rewards going and going and going. A stop at BP isn't a stop at all. Keep it going.
And we found him in 5 days.
You're kidding me.
No. 5 days.
And there have been someone that's been searching for 4 years.
4 years. Yeah.
So 4 years of work, you guys were able to accomplish successfully in 5 days.
5 days.
Wow.
And what does this mean for the child? What it means for the child is, number one, they have hope. Because we get children who are 15, 16, 17. Well, guess what? They've got it. The clock is running out. When they hit 18 in half of the states in this country.
Did they age out?
And age out, for someone who doesn't know, that means no birthday cake. That means their clothes are in a bag. They're on the street. They need to get dropped off someplace, and they may have some money or they may not have any money on them, and they're dropped off at a street corner. Imagine your child, if someone's got an 18, 17-year-old, imagine someone taking them, dropping them downtown and saying, good luck. That's how we do it to the foster kids. Now, there are some organizations and some governmental programs that are starting to realize that's a bad idea.
Yeah, well, because here's the thing, Richard. We're feeding a problem that we say we want to eliminate as far as increasing homelessness and homeless individuals and individuals who are at risk for committing crimes or violent crimes. We're feeding it. Because now what you have done is take a desperate person and place them in a more desperate situation.
Oh, absolutely. And there is, you may have heard the term foster care to prison pipeline.
Yeah.
Well, that's true. The majority of people who are on death row were in the foster care welfare system. Mm. That's not by accident. Mm. We have got sex trafficking victims in California. Yep. More than half of them come from, again, foster care, the welfare system.
Aging out
or actually being in the system and having this happen while they're in foster care.
Incredible.
There are stories of kids who were in a home and maybe the parents, the people running it, they were actually pedophiles. They were running, and this was a story a few years ago, they were running a sex trafficking ring from their home.
Absolutely incredible, man.
Now, all this is, and that's why it's so important to get these kids out as soon as possible. And that's our goal as a nonprofit. Our goal is that when we get a case, is to get on it, get these kids out as fast as possible. Now, I will say this. It usually, on average, takes us about 3, maybe 4 months to do this. But that's after agencies have spent years
trying
to do something.
Right.
And we have some that we do in the 36 hours, some in days, some in a couple of weeks. We have those. Those are wonderful. But they don't come to us because they're easy cases. They come to us because they're the worst.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Because it's hard, because they understand that what you performed, the service you perform, everyone can't do what you do, but everyone can do something. And what it is, they understand, they recognize that you guys are handling something that's really tough. And because of that, because of your tireless and relentless efforts in finding family members, you are known from right here as the Sherlock Holmes of foster care. Now, how do you work with government agencies, both locally and federally, to accomplish and get these done? Because I know you have to work with them some. Do they just, you know, message you or send you information? Say, here, find Travis. How does that go about? How do you work with them and get that done?
Well, you're pretty close. We are a That's it. Our inbox gets, you know, a message from someone. It could be CASA, which means Court Appointed Special Advocate. This is a national organization of people who these are all volunteers who spend their time with a child, being the voice of that child in court, so that hopefully the child doesn't get, you know, run over by the wants and desires and the objectives of Child Protective Services, which aren't always aligned to the child. Even the courts sometimes aren't. And what am I talking about? What I'm saying here is that sometimes a judge or Child Protective Services will say, well, let's send them back to the mother. But the mother hasn't kicked the habit. The mother is still running around on the street. The father is still stealing. The father is still breaking, under probation and, questionably ready to go back to jail because they just have not changed. They haven't turned that corner.
Correct.
And children should not be basketballs being bounced back and forth because, oh, there's an open shot here. I can give it back
to
the father.
Let's just pass it.
Yes, absolutely.
That might be a good shot. Yeah, let's pass it to this person. They've already fumbled the ball five times. But you know what? They're family. I get that, Richard. I told you, that bouncing back and forth, man, it will make you unstable mentally, emotionally, socially. Because now you don't know how to socially have friends. You don't know how to have a real friendship with anybody or a lasting relationship, friendship with anybody, because you already believe it's going to end soon anyway, because sooner or later you're going to be gone. So why try to set roots someplace? Why try to establish a good friendship with someone? Because it's going to, be gone before you know it anyhow. So you find have a lot of people in society now where situations like this, they don't value relationships because they never had one. They never had a chance to cultivate one because they're always on the go. And that's what happens with these children. They're always on the go. And they say, oh, they're just a problem child. Well, they're always on the go. They haven't learned life skills of how to cultivate the things some people say they need to cultivate. So do me a favor. So I heard a lot of what your organization does. And truly, you are definitely Sherlock Holmes, hat and pipe and all. provide us with a little bit more details about what services your organization offers to help these displaced foster children. For example, things like temporary housing, any medical needs maybe that you may supply, food, anything like that.
Well, the way that we help and that family finding helps a child is, again, gives them the stability that the child needs. That's massive.
Absolutely.
That also addresses that, which you said about the, quote, problem child. These children are stressed, and they are responding as anyone who is so stressed that they scream, they yell. And we know people who are like, John, what happened? Why are you acting this way? Well, John was stressed. We know that, but we don't understand that when we see it in children, we're thinking troubled child. Especially if they're teenagers. Oh, it's a troubled teen.
Mm.
As you said, they are so disoriented. They have no idea what is up. They have no idea who to trust. They're moved from school to school. So, again, the family finding really helps bring that down put them with someone that they can relate to. That's number one, if we could do that. Number two, the way we help, to lower the homelessness, to lower all those problems. Sex trafficking, you can't, you know, the chances of being sex trafficked drop dramatically if they're with their family.
Correct.
The family pressure, you know, if someone starts getting out of line, grandma or mom is going to step in and say, what are you doing? You know, they're going to feel the full fury of the family on them. Now, it doesn't always work, but it will certainly move a lot of kids to say, ooh, I may not want to do that. Family pressure is very valuable. Yeah, you're laughing. So I mean, I'm sure there's some stories there. And there we go. So you know the family pressure. That's
yeah,
number one.
Buddy.
But if we can't get the family, if for some reason family can't do it, and look, could be because of age, could be because of COVID, could be because you know COVID has attacked someone. So to the point that they just can't take that risk. You know, and we lost a lot of grandparents. They either passed away or they mm-hmm. just can't take the risk of having such a, you know, an illness. And a lot of foster parents stepped away. But one of the ways we're able to help if we can't give them back to family is adoption. There are a lot of cases. Yeah. Let me tell you about this one real quickly.
Sure.
Four kids. They were, two of them were really young. They're with the foster parent. The foster parents decided they wanted to adopt the kids, so they got two of them immediately, no problem. But because of the age of the other two, the judge said, look, we haven't found the father. I want you to look for the father. Now, the thing was, the father was living in Mexico, mm-hmm. and not only that, the father was indigenous. Now, what does that mean?
Mm.
So for here in the U.S., we'd say, you know, Native American. In Mexico, same thing. So they may or may not be part of the mainstream. They
correct,
may,
correct.
You know, they may be a little outside. So, and it was also in Mexico, and the agency didn't have anyone who spoke Spanish, knew the country. And so we get a call, like you were saying, how do you get it? We get an email, talk to the caseworker, and really, she was having none of this. He's saying, I probably someone said, look, call them. I don't want to. Call them anyway. So she's calling, but she made it very clear she didn't think anything was going to happen. She
right,
said, look, this
right.
case has been dragging on for a year. These two kids have not been able to be adopted. We go to court in 30 days. We all expect the judge to kick it down the road for another 4 months because nothing's going to happen. And we're looking at a year and a half, 2 years of these kids, you know, these two siblings are not going to be with their other siblings. Do what you can. Okay, so 30-day deadline, we're on it. 28 days, we've got the report in. They go to court.
Wow.
Next phone call. She's like, oh, my God. What had happened in court is the judge had gotten our report. And he's looking at all the work we did. And we said, look, we didn't find the father, but based on the information you gave us, it looks like we found two potential relatives. And he's,
wow.
The judge said, look, great work. I like the level, the thoroughness. So this completes all of our requirements for having done the work to find the father. By the way, the father has given us three aliases
wow.
and a couple of different birth dates. So we don't really know. This is his real name, which means we don't know if these relatives have, you know, these people have anything to do with this child.
Correct,
you know
correct.
What?
I have no idea.
We're just going to head and terminate those parental rights, get this adoption going. And she was just like, you're the best. So we have done that with many adoption cases where we have got to a case that has been locked up where the judge has said, I'd like to adopt these children. I'd like to have them in a new home.
Mm-hmm.
But you have to do better to try to find the parent to show me you're actually
correct.
Trying to find the parent. Do better. And the agencies are like, how do we do better? They don't speak Spanish. They don't know the country. If it's in Central America, they may speak Quiche, Mom, Acateco. That doesn't sound like Spanish to me because it's not. They may be speaking these indigenous languages.
Indigenous languages, that's right.
Yeah.
And they can get lost in the country because they speak those indigenous languages.
Oh, absolutely. Look, I mean, we're struggling in this country, which is why I wrote my book, Do No Harm, because having someone who speaks Spanish is like way out there. It is such a struggle for agencies to have one person who speaks Spanish. There's someone I quoted from Illinois. She said, I could understand if we were talking about Mandarin, but we're talking about Spanish. How hard can this be? But it is. It is hard for someone to read Spanish. And you know, if you've read a legal document, I don't care if you speaking, I don't care if you're an English professor, it's still legalese.
It's still not everyday common vernacular, okay?
Exactly.
It's its own language all by itself. So I can ask you, you segue to something perfect. Perfect segue. So tell us about your international award-winning book called Do No Harm, which is about the immigration children separation at the U.S.-Mexico border and this country's foster care crisis. I'm going to put a picture of it up right here. I'm going to put it up. There you go.
There we go.
Tell us a little bit about this book real quick for us, Richard.
Well, it is an international award-winning book. I'm very pleased about that. I wrote this in the middle of having dozens of immigrant children cases that we were working. We have worked cases in 7 countries.
Wow.
Including Romania.
Romania?
Yes. Now, we both know that's not in Latin America. I'm not sure when I got it if the people giving it to me knew that. But, yes, they asked me to do Romania, and I still said yes. We still closed cases in Romania. So, yeah, it's amazing. But I wrote the book because I was so upset and angry. I was angry because if you've got a child missing, you put everything out there. You put out the search engine. I mean, you get the search dogs. You get the police. You get the sheriffs. You get the neighbors. You get the helicopter. You get the infrared. You pull everything out to find that child. We didn't do that with these children, even though there was an executive order signed by President Trump, saying, we're going to do this. That didn't happen. What they did is they said, oh, we'll let this team try. They knew there were other teams, including the county's best tracker with the best tracking dogs. They said, no, we'll do this, and we'll see what happens 1 year later. Well, that didn't work. Well, let's send in team 2. Second year. That didn't work. I'm like, that's not how you do a rescue. You do a rescue, you throw everything into it. So the government did not do that. And when I say government, you know, take your pick, mostly Congress, because it has to have funding. And the people who are running this decided to do it in this manner. They did not go full bore. And that's why I get cold cases. And I got tired of listening to people on the news giving half stories. Not bad information, but they're limited. They're not working the cases. And I am. I see the raw data. And so I wrote about it in the book. And also because those immigrant kids, guess what? A lot of them were put into foster care.
Wow.
So for U.S.-born children and U.S.-born families, why should I care? Well, guess what? Your tax dollars
are going to it
because they're not looking hard enough to find their families and to reunite them. And when they get into foster care, guess what? Now we've got foster care caseworkers who don't know anything about Latin America, who are going to try and struggle and waste their time for some reason instead of going to an expert organization like mine to get the job done, they're going to try to muddle it through for the next 2 years and somehow figure that's noble. There's nothing noble about cheating a child out of 2 years of their life, not getting that child back to their grandparent, not getting that child back to an aunt or an uncle that would love them and give them a normal life and get them back onto an improved future. There's nothing noble about that.
Absolutely.
And that's what's happening. And so the other half of the book is about our foster care system that right now it's Swiss cheese. We've lost thousands and thousands of grandparents. We've lost thousands and thousands of foster parents and family and parents who now the children are in foster care.
Mm-hmm.
It's a mess and states are scrambling to try to fix it. So it writes about that. These are terrible situations, but you don't get a good book by just complaining and saying, this is terrible. You got to have solutions. And the book talks about practical solutions. They may not be popular. I never said they'd be popular.
Oh, man, I like that. Practical is not always popular.
No, but they will work. And there's a Kansas State right now is doing exactly what I said in the book. They have put this massive focus, and after 1 year, you know, they raised the bar on some areas and some other areas. They're still on the ground, and they said, look, we need to work on this. Now, think about this. That state is focused, hyper-focused on fixing their system. That's not to say that's happening in other states, like Texas, and not to say it's happening in other states around the country. It's not. And so our children are being left in these institutions. They're sleeping in hotel rooms. They're sleeping on office floors.
Wow.
So if there's someone who's listening is who cares about a child, that's why you care about that child, because no child should be 5 years old, 8 years old, going to school and coming back to an office and sleeping in the cafeteria room or the break area because there's no space and there's no foster home and nobody's looking for their relatives. That's why I wrote the book and talked about the people who are making a difference, like the judges, like foster parents, people like you, because you asked me to be here as a guest to get the word out, to let people know we can help these kids. And there are lots of ways to help them, and I'll share that right now. You can go to my website. It's ForeverHomes4, F-O-R, fosterkids.org. You can donate. I can't send you to Guatemala. You may not want to go. But I have people down there who will get the job done and will get that child out of the system, and that means we can focus on the children who need the mental health. We get more kids out and back to their families. That means less kids. Or taking up that money, could go to the kids who are desperately needed because they're going to need care. They may need lifetime care. And there you go, right there. Hit the donate button.
Donate.
Go to our Facebook page. Those are the two best ways. Support us that way because it's so specialized what we do.
And you can customize what you give. Am I correct?
Oh, absolutely. Listen, I used to tell people we would get 5,000 likes on a post, and I would say if everyone had given just a dollar right there, boom, we could help so many children if everyone just given a dollar. People underestimate the power of a dollar, $5, $10. It really all goes to help.
Well, let me do this. While you're talking, let me do this while you're talking.
Okay, I'm going to let him do that while I'm talking. And there are other ways. And it doesn't have to be my nonprofit. Listen, foster kids are everywhere. It could be supporting a nonprofit that has transitional programs for when a child is ready to age out. They say, look, don't age out. Come with us. We're going to give you a place to stay. We'll give you a little stipend. We'll help you finish high school. Up to 40% of kids who are in foster care do not finish high school by the time they get to age 18. They need help to get their high school degree. You know they're not going to go anywhere in life if they don't have their high school degree, unless they're talented with their hands or have some kind of trade skill. And then they'll help give them into college or, again, into some kind of a trade college, something so they can earn a living and have a life, have a chance at it. So there are lots of nonprofits out there that people can help. I'd love them to help mine. But look, if there's one that you're sweet on, go help them. They need it. They may not ask you all the time, but trust me, every nonprofit wants to help more kids. So whether they're doing good or not, or need more, there's always another child we could help. And it all gets down into, if we have more funding, we can help more kids. It's the simple law of economics. So it's there's so many things and ways that we can help children.
Done.
And people, you know, they could go on and like a post, they could give, they could volunteer. So there's no reason that someone can't help somehow, some way to make a change for a child and make that child's life so much better by helping to get them back with family, if possible, get adopted otherwise, or support a transitional program. So even though nothing worked out, that child has a chance to go into adulthood with the tools they need.
There you go. So I'm not going to ask you to do something I haven't done. This show is not about me trying to foster money from anybody or ask you for money. This show is about to address this issue that we this concern that we brought up. But when I went on there, I said, well, if I'm going to talk about it, I should put my money where my mouth is. So how about that? So there you go. I went ahead and gave. That's what I believe. If you're going to ask somebody, if you're going to talk about it, do it. You know, if you can help, the best way to partner with someone in the cause, if you say you believe in it, is to show action behind it. I am not asking you to give money. I am not soliciting. I am saying if you would like to help, find a way to do it. And if your way to help is to give, if your help is to say, hey, maybe I'll do this or do that, whatever it is, find your way. And do that. We all have to find a way to do that. I got to say this. The work you perform is on an international scale. So if someone right now, if someone out there is listening and is aware of children in this vulnerable situation, what are some ways you can, what are some things you would say to them to kind of encourage them right now?
I would say this. There's always something that people can do to help. If you know of a child who is in foster care, and you know you feel that they're in, they're looking for family. Let's put it this way: if you're the first foster parent, and you've got a child, and that you feel that not enough is being done to find that child's relatives, because people in foster care, they're really, most of them are there realizing it's short term. The child's going to come. The child's going to go. They're there for the child. Those are the best big-hearted people in the world. Then talk to Child Protective Services. If you don't think they're listening to you, and that may be, then go to the state's ombudsman. Talk to them. Get an attorney. There are families out there who are fighting tooth and nail to get their child. So every case is different. I wish we didn't even have to say that. I wish that wasn't even an option that people would have to find an agency. But unfortunately, that happens sometimes, where agencies just don't have the best interests of the child at heart. And some people have not in foster care now because they made the ultimate sacrifice of putting the child before them and their love of working as a foster parent, and they're not there in foster care. They got punished for it. But that was because they loved that child so much. So if you're in that situation, that's how you can help. If you want to help a child, be a foster parent. Again, we've got kids sleeping on floors, sleeping in hotel rooms. There's just not enough foster parents. So if you think you could be one, even as an emergency foster parent, look into it. And the time you will spend to get prepared and to get ready, yes, it's something to go through.
Absolutely.
But it's worth it.
That is absolutely correct, guys. I don't know about you guys, but I told you this is going to be a good episode. I don't know what you thought I was thinking about. This is going to be a good one, guys. I told you. Richard, thank you so much for taking out your time and being here, guys. Once again, thank you for your service. Guys, Richard is a vet. He's a Navy veteran, so I got a cousin who was in the Navy. I tried to join the Navy, Richard. I had open heart surgery, so they PDQ'd me. Yeah, I did. I tried to join. I tried to join three times. Three times. They said no.
Steve Rogers. Oh my God.
I know, right? Yeah. There you go. I was waiting on to get that little message. Say, hey, look, we're gonna experiment on you. Nope. When I saw that movie and I started to crap, that was me. I went, jeez. Put my life on the movie screen.
Well, hey, as a veteran, I salute you for your efforts. I mean, that's over and beyond. So, I mean.
Three times, Richard. The first time was like, maybe. And then the second time was no. And the last time was, I didn't want to tell you what he told me the last time. So we'll leave that alone. We just know it was a resounding no. We'll leave it at that. But guys, thank you, Richard Villasana, for being here. Thank you for all the work that you're doing at the border with everybody. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in. Guys, it's about that time. And as always, it's been a real blast. Listen, don't forget to visit our YouTube page. That's Tell Me Something Good with a capital T. And as always, you can stream right here every Thursday, 6:30 p.m. Central, 7:30 p.m. Eastern to listen to the show. Or you can catch it on your favorite streaming platform like Apple Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, Pandora, and so many more. Richard and I, we got to get out of here. But as always, in parting, if you're going to tell me something, then tell me something good. I'm out of here, y'all. We got to go.
When you have to stop but don't really want to, stop at BP. Because BP has everything you need to keep it going. Fuel to keep the adventures going. The BP Me app to keep the savings and the commutes going. Snacks and drinks to keep the crew going. And the BP Me Rewards Visa to keep the rewards going and going and going. A stop at BP isn't a stop at all. Keep it going.